is Felger and Mass.
Yeah, Rex Ryan here.
I hate guests.
Yep.
There's no reason to touch them.
Keep it in your pants.
Why would you do that?
Felger and Mass, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
We're doing just great. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to cover everything from the weekend. There is a lot. We got all four teams definitely on the table. We've even got a heavyweight boxing match to discuss. We've got a falling Chinese space station. So there was a lot to cover from the weekend, Maz. I do think the Rob Gronkowski stuff and the Patriots stuff remains the lead, if you ask me.
Sure.
You see that report on ESPN over the weekend?
I did.
Pretty much validating what has already been reported by Curran and Greg Bedard, among others. And I'll give you the particulars here in a second, but just your reaction to a story that won't go away, that hasn't gone away, that apparently hasn't been resolved.
So here's the way I look at it. This idea that Gronk is unhappy and the fact that it has now persisted to the point it has persisted, then all of a sudden it comes out that Bill Belichick has reached the point where he's worried about Gronk being all in and is now willing to trade him. And, oh, by the way, now interesting that Gronk is leaning towards playing again. Like, I just wonder if all this goes hand in hand. Gronk is leveraging the coach, so the coach is waiting and waiting and waiting, and then it gets to a certain point where he's still waiting, and he says, well, if the guy doesn't want to play, then I'll trade his ass. I mean, what's the point here? I might as well move him. And all of a sudden, Gronk is leaning towards playing. So I think this is the last part of that story to me is a reaction from the Gronk camp because Belichick is getting impatient, and they don't want to piss Bill off to such an extent that he trades goes ahead and trades Gronk. Because Gronk wants to play with Brady, I would imagine. Who wouldn't? So to me, this is sort of there's a little power play, a little tug of war going on here.
What do you think, Murray?
Oh, I think it proves that my crackpot theory is still in play here, and that is that Brady and Gronk can ultimately force the hand of the Crafts to keep Gronk and force Bill Belichick out because it's another football decision that's going to be made over his head. Because I think with everything that you hear, Belichick really does want to trade him because he's already dead in his mind, and I don't think the Crafts are going to allow it. And they shouldn't.
I agree with that piece. I don't know if Bill is dead set on trading him.
Think he really wants to trade him.
But I do believe that the team wouldn't do it. The team wouldn't do it. The organization wouldn't do it, i.e. Kraft wouldn't do it. So like that I do believe. Does Bill want to trade him? I don't know. I mean, would he? Yeah, Bill would.
Oh, he'd trade anybody.
Exactly. Yeah, he recognizes his importance, but we all know. And there's no one more ruthless with personnel decisions than that guy. And if you're not all in, well, you're not on board and bye. I'm going to see what I can get for you.
So, I mean, I do find it interesting. The story is on ESPN over the weekend. It's Jeff Darlington. And ostensibly, the headline is that Gronkowski is, quote-unquote, pretty certain that he will come back. So, like, from 10,000 feet, that's a positive story. He's pretty certain he's coming back. There was uncertainty, and now he's pretty certain he's coming back. Like, this is a good story, right? Don't you focus on the whole other piece to the story, which is, however, third paragraph, however, this dose of good news for Patriots fans comes with some dilution. Lingering frustrations remain between Gronkowski and head coach Bill Belichick, along with others in the Patriots organization, according to sources close to each side. Whether those frustrations on either side will impact Gronkowski's return to the team remains the final piece to this unfinished puzzle. For Gronkowski, the physical anguish of the 2017 season, which led him late in the regular season to tell people he was likely to retire, was paired with some mental fatigue from the high-strung culture within the Patriots organization, sources said. Nothing has occurred since the end of the season to convince him that that is going to change. And Gronkowski knows he'll need to be ready for a similar toll on his mind and body if he returns in 2018. When you hear this stuff about the mental fatigue, right? Let's just focus on that. Because the physical stuff is, we understand, we get, and if he's feeling that, he's feeling that, right? It's really, that's unimpeachable in my opinion. The mental fatigue?
Yeah, it's called dealing with Bill.
What are we talking about with the mental fatigue, and how do you feel about that?
Dealing with Bill. It's dealing with Bill and living by Bill's rules and doing everything the way Bill wants it. And that's what that is. And to me, this is all, like, that part of the story to me is, I want to say promoted, that's the wrong word, but, prodded by Brady. Like, because of Brady's behavior with Guerrero and Brady pushing Bill, now Gronk is pushing Bill. And Gronk is tired of Bill. But Bill has been Bill from the beginning. Bill's always been a pain in the ass.
So this is my point. Who are you more frustrated by when you hear that?
Gronk.
That there is mental fatigue and from the high-strung culture within the Patriots organization. Are you frustrated with the high-strung culture in the Patriots organization? Are you frustrated with Belichick? Or are you more frustrated with Gronkowski?
I'm more frustrated with Gronk.
Me too.
Yeah, initially, when this whole thing started, and look, this is why I told you, like, you know, if this is all some sort of contract play at the beginning, are you retiring or not? Let's go. Like, make your decision, let's go, because the world moves on. We're not going to stop everything we do for Gronk, as good as he is. And look, ultimately, I'm sort of giving you that, you know, again, I offered that initially as a little bit of a devil's advocate. Of course you want the player. Yes, you want the player. He's great. Of course you want him. But this whole thing with Guerrero and the high-maintenance players now is going to be a pain in the ass. And so, like, I look at Gronk and say, look, the guy is a pain in the ass. He's been a pain in the ass since you arrived. When he drafted you, he was a pain in the ass. What? It goes part and parcel to the success, though. Like, part of the reason the Patriots are who they are is because Bill's a pain in the ass.
Absolutely.
So if you want to keep playing for him, you want to keep playing with Brady, that's part of the deal.
Yeah, Bill's a tight ass, but Gronk's wrong here. Like, why does he think after all of these years it's now going to change? Because it's always been run like the military down there. And what, because your brand has gotten bigger and part of your brand is being the party guy? And what, you're mad because Bill's too much of a tight ass and won't let you talk about, you know, doing a touchdown dance and things of that nature? Like, he ain't going to change. So, like it says, you're either in or you're out.
So, like this part I find the most interesting, and I'm with Belichick on it. All of a sudden, Gronkowski and Brady can't handle Belichick? Maybe Bill's gotten a little worse over the years, or a little, you know, he's gotten egomaniacal too. You know, it's just all the egos of, so I'm not telling you that Bill's...
Well, he's definitely less willing to bend.
I mean, I'm just telling you, I'm not saying that Bill's exactly the same, but he's at least close to what he was when he first took over. And now Brady and Gronkowski can't handle it?
It's because they've gotten bigger than the team. They're now brands. They're not just football players on the Patriots. They're brands. It's Tom Brady, the brand. It's Rob Gronkowski, the brand. And I can understand the coach's frustration.
Me
there.
Too. I'm with Bill on this.
See, I think a lot of it stems from Brady. Because, again, look, I don't know the exact point where this thing started to spiral. And maybe that's too strong a term. But to me, it goes back to after that fifth Super Bowl. So, like, it feels like a lot of these guys were, you know, once Brady won the fifth one, well, now he's in uncharted territory. Nobody's ever done what Brady did. So maybe Brady woke up and said, okay, why do I have to keep beating my head against the wall when we're now at a place where no one's ever been before? Whereas Bill looks at it as, I don't care where we are. We're still doing it the same way we've always done it. Why should I change?
So I guess that's a question for the people. Are you frustrated with Gronkowski and Brady for pulling this crap now? The mental fatigue from the high-strung culture? Does that frustrate you with Belichick, or does that frustrate you more with Gronkowski? And same with Brady. He wants to be happy and appreciated, says his wife. Is that on Brady, or is that on Bill? How do you feel about that? 617-779-0985. The frustration's two-way street, says Darlington, with Gronkowski. For Belichick, since the season's end, sources say he has expressed frustration with those close to him about Gronkowski, specifically questioning whether he remains all in, a critical aspect of Belichick's blueprint for success. And Bedard has said at the Boston Sports Journal that when he thinks you're not all in, that's when he starts thinking about life without you. And when he starts thinking about life without you, he gets comfortable with it real quick. Examples of Belichick's frustration, says ESPN, are as nuanced as his discontent with Gronkowski's message in a recent Instagram post regarding Danny Amendola, who left the Patriots to sign with the Dolphins. Beneath a video of him hugging Amendola that Gronkowski posted on March 14th, he wrote in part, "Be free, all caps, Murray. Be happy, all caps."
Now, this part I find funny, because what, you know, did Bill see this when he was perusing for, like, Instagram ass models? just try to look at
come on now.
Jen Selter, and so you're a bum, and what's this? But, I'm sure that goes right up his tailpipe.
I think he was alerted to this by his media people. I don't think he was searching for ass models on Instagram, Murray.
No, you never know.
That exists?
I mean, that's all Instagram is, Mike. That,
really?
Yeah, like that and food porn. That's the only reason to be on there.
Yeah, ass model. I'm in the ass model. I don't need the food porn.
A good paleo recipe or two. I don't know. Maybe that or ass porn. Does Bill have a right to be frustrated by that?
Yeah.
Sure.
It's a direct shot at him.
Sure.
The way that he runs the team.
Yeah. I mean, again, it feels like the whole offseason has been this little campaign on the part of, you know, Brady, Gronk, and some of the other players to tweak the coach every chance they get from, you know, starting with the Malcolm Butler decision, right? Like, and obviously, look, Guerrero's at the center of this, too, because Guerrero became Gronk's guy. Guerrero's Brady's guy. There's all of that. They're tired of Bill being a dink.
Okay, so be free, be happy. Does Gronk need to be free and happy? Does Gronk need to be free and happy? Like, the whole thing about not being able to celebrate the touchdowns, I didn't even talk about it. I like that the Pats are one of the teams that doesn't do these goofy routines. As entertaining as they are, I'm just glad that they're one of the teams that don't. But Gronk needs it to be free and happy.
Well, how stupid is that? That's big of a problem to him.
Like, oh, you won't let me talk about the dance? It's like, who cares? Like,
come on, exactly.
I'm telling you, Gronk needs to be careful here. Because, and look, maybe the Crafts would intervene.
I mean, to me, the whole Gronk thing's more entertaining because he's here. You know, if he played for Rex Ryan and could be the full Gronk and be the full goofball, we'd all probably be sick of him. I mean, if you're not already, if it's not too much already. I think the fact that he's got a sort of...
There's a level of restraint.
Yes, that you know, that he's constrained by the grumpy old coach sort of adds to the entertainment value. If he were just left to his own devices, it would be overkill. I'm sorry, Matt. You're just going to say...
No, go ahead. I honestly, I lost my train of thought. It's a Monday. What do you want me to tell you?
Yeah, I know. I jumped in there. Anyway, this is where we're beginning. Are Gronk and Brady beginning to bug you a little bit with the mental fatigue? Or is it Belichick's time just to tone it down a little bit, Bill? Where do you stand on that?
This is Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Felger and Mass.
They're more scared of you than you are of them.
98.5, the Sports Hub. Sports Hub. Sports Hub. Sports Hub.
Well, there are some disjointed relationships right now within the Patriots organization. The one relationship that is still as strong as ever is the one between Tom Brady and Rob Gronkowski. Gronkowski is truly considering retirement and was really even in the regular season because of the physical and mental anguish that he was feeling as a result of the 2017 season. But Tom Brady is the strong force in his mind right now. If Tom is committed, then Gronkowski feels like he is committed.
Ooh, when you say disjointed relationships,
yes.
Are you alluding
to
one between Gronk and Bill Belichick?
Many around both people feel like time could ease this bit of disjointed nature between the two. But we're talking about frustrations on both sides of the aisle here. For Gronkowski, he is just physically and mentally spent and doesn't feel like much has changed this offseason to make him think that that's going to be any different this coming year. That being said, like I mentioned, he is, quote, pretty certain he'll come back as long as Brady's committed. Belichick is a little bit frustrated because he feels like Gronkowski is not, quote, all in, which is obviously a critical component to his blueprint. He has cited things to people close to him as nuanced as an Instagram post that Gronkowski posted about Danny Amendola signing with the Miami Dolphins, under which he said, be free, be happy. That didn't exactly make Belichick very happy. He was reading the underlying message there. He wants to know that Gronkowski is all in. Guys, it is a fluid situation, but one that I believe can be rectified in the coming days, weeks, and perhaps months.
This stuff has been out there. I think what's newsy about it is that it still hasn't abated. It still hasn't. It's still the same story. It hasn't cleared. It hasn't cleared. And now ESPN's on top of all the local reporting, and it just feels like it's almost like an established thing.
I mean, I hate to keep drawing this line, okay? But if Brady isn't being a pill over Guerrero, does Gronk do this?
No, I think Gronk is emboldened by Brady.
Well, he has to be, right? To me, this all goes back to the quarterback. It goes back to the quarterback. But anyway.
Okay, so your thoughts. Tom and Quincy, lead us off today.
Hey, brother, I'm telling you, Malcolm Butler is an all-pro as far as I'm concerned. After what he did in that Super Bowl, he should have played. And let's talk about Belichick. Belichick is an X's and O's guy. He's an X's and O's. These players aren't even human beings to him. I'm telling you, I think Brady should retire or else Giselle's going to be wheeling him around in a wheelchair for 5 years. And if the Gronk comes back, and he the same thing is going to happen to him. He's going to be bedridden. And the only one he's going to see every 15, 20, maybe 2 hours is the nurse that changes his bedpan. I'm telling you.
Okay, Tom. Thanks for the call. Bill not treating his players like human beings.
True. What else is new?
T. True.
No, he treats them like commodities.
And I think in some cases he goes too far. I think there's some things that Bill does that are unnecessary and do not help you to win. So I'm not endorsing everything that Bill does, again. However, I think generally speaking, if you asked me, is his approach the one that I would want out of my coach? The answer is yes. I do. I do. You cannot let the players have too much control. You can't let them dictate tone, culture. I think it's just in that sport, as much as anyone, I think it does start with the coach and starts with cult. And so the way Bill handles it, I think, is the way I want it handled. And if the players can't handle it, then they're the ones that got to go, not him. It becomes problematic, though, when Brady and Gronkowski are those players. Like, where did this come from all of a sudden? They're the ones?
It's a good question. I don't know. To me, I mean, again, I'm sort of guessing here, but that fifth Super Bowl, maybe Brady won that fifth one and said, okay, I can let up a little now. You know, emotionally, right? Because he's a nut. He's a complete psychopath when it comes to the competitive part of it.
So this is a late development, but it's really about those two, I think. John in the car. Go ahead, John.
Hey, guys. Love the show. I'll keep my tangent at a minimum. I think it's a lot of this is on Bill. His relationship with the players is not good, and it's been declining for the last couple of years now. And the fact that he's lost Brady is huge. Brady wants to win. Like, last year after that loss, he looked like he was defeated morally and every which way. I see this as a Bill issue, and it might just be his success getting to his head, but appreciate the call. Love to hear what you
okay.
think.
Okay, so Bill's going to change his ways? We've seen this a lot. You've seen it in New England, folks, where you've had a coach that's considered too player-friendly, try and toughen up. Remember Ray Berry did it at the end, and that's when he decided to play Tippett. Help me with it. Agnew, Lipet,
Garen Veris.
He played a bunch of starters in the fourth preseason game.
And they all got hurt.
Because he was trying to put this a tougher camp, and he's trying to prove himself. And so he played all these guys in the fourth preseason game, and they all got hurt and killed their season. And then Pete Carroll did it at the very end, too. I remember I covered that year. Like, he was tougher in training camp. And, you know, so we've seen player-friendly coaches try and get tough because that's what people want out of them. Have you ever seen a non-players coach go the other way?
Like, I mean, the only one that sticks out instinctively in the top of my head is Coughlin in that final year with the Giants.
And did he?
Or those final years. Yeah, remember they had to have those leadership council meetings with the players and all that crap? Remember that?
Barely.
Coughlin must have been sticking his finger down his throat while he was doing all that crap. Because he and Belichick are cut from the same cloth. They're born out of the same sort of mentality when it comes to football and the military aspect of it and the whole nine yards. Like, they are detail-oriented down to the nth degree. And all of a sudden, you know, Coughlin's players complained, and he had to bring some of those veteran guys in and start talking out the problems.
So when you say Coughlin's last year?
No, last years.
For the final years, I see.
Yeah, I think it was 2011 where that happened. And they were able to extend his career.
When they won the Super Bowl?
Yes.
All I'm saying is, by the same token, when Pete Carroll showed up with the tough act, we all went, come on, Pete. You know, that ain't going to work. You're not being yourself. If Bill shows up and all of a sudden is like, go ahead, guys. Tweet it. Talk about your injuries. Go ahead, Gronk. Gyrate to your heart's content after a touchdown, and let's talk about it after the game. If Bill does that, is that akin to Pete Carroll trying to get tough and it doesn't work either?
Oh, it absolutely would not work. He is who he is. To me, this is indicative of the players wanting more power. Effectively, that's what it comes down to, is they want more power, and they're willing to fight Bill on it.
John and Walpole, go ahead.
How you doing today, folks?
Great.
I think you're looking at... consider this regarding Gronk. Look at the big picture. Now, on the business side of things, he's been surrounded with people who have done very well for him over the time, and they've made a lot of decisions for him, his dad, his advisors, everything else. When it comes down to playing the game, he's responsible to take the initiative day to day. And you look at his outside activities. He doesn't demonstrate at times that he's the sharpest knife in the drawer. And Bill has to hold his feet to the fire, probably more so than a lot of other players on the team. And at this point in time, he probably wants Bill to let go of the reins, but the only reason why the kid's had such good success, when you look at what he's done in his private life and done some pretty, you know, kind of wild, stupid things, Bill keeps the pressure on, and he's probably at the point now where he doesn't want Bill putting the pressure on him. But
okay, so is that about Gronkowski or is that about Bill?
That's about Gronkowski.
Yes, I agree. The players have changed. And I'm talking about Brady and Gronkowski. They've changed, not Bill. And let me tell you, caller, and thanks for the call. I don't mean to cut you off, but I am. Bill's hard on Gronkowski, in part maybe because he has to be, because Gronk has that wild streak. But I think it's also about, if you're tough on the best players, then everyone else falls into line.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been a huge part of their success, is that Belichick's been able to call out Tom Brady in a meeting and show tape and, you know, look at this, and you screwed up and you almost cost us. And if Brady can take it, then players 3 through 53 have to take it.
Right, they have no choice.
And so that's been a huge part of it. If Brady can't take it anymore, then I think that's an important thing for Bill.
Well, and it goes the other way is what happens, and you're seeing it with Gronk, is that once the star player becomes emboldened and the coach lets him get away with it, in this case the quarterback, then all of a sudden another guy wants it. And then they say, well, these different rules for those guys. And now Belichick's inconsistent, right? Now there's, oh, he does it for some guys, not in the others. Now you're creating a crack in the middle of the locker room. There's all kinds of problems here when you do it that way.
Okay, folks, we're going to take your calls on this all day long. I still think it's the lead story. It is a reentry Monday, so we got to get to all the other stuff from the weekend. Coming up next, we'll play a game. It goes like this. You know you're a Bruins honk when... dot, dot, dot. Like, we played this game before. You know you're a Celtics honk when you chant MVP for Isaiah Thomas at the free throw line.
Or Daniel Tice.
Right, okay, that's when you know you're a Celtics honk. You know you're a Red Sox honk when... dot, dot, dot. You actually like Sweet Caroline? I don't know.
You
know,
yeah. You think Brock Holt's a good player?
Thank you.
You're a Red Sox honk.
Yeah. Exactly.
Good job, Murray.
You think Brock Holt's a good player? Excellent one. Precisely right. You know you're a Bruins honk when... dot, dot, dot. We'll play that after the update.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Felger. I like anti-compatible.
And Mass.
Stupid. They're so stupid.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
13 seconds left. Chop free by Krejci. Held in by the Bruins. Still held in. Far circle now. Back is centered. Fired. They score! With 4 seconds left, the Philadelphia Flyers had 3, maybe 4 chances to clear. And the Boston Bruins drive it out in front. And Bergeron was the guy who hammered it home. The Bruins have come back to tie it at 3 and shock this crowd in Philly.
Reentry Monday. Bruins get 3 of 4 points. Dominate Florida on Saturday. Steal a point yesterday. They were ass yesterday. They were ass. Which, you can understand. It was third game in 4 days.
Yeah, a lot of hockey there.
Back-to-back matinees on the road. Scheduled loss. And they sort of played like it. And somehow, somehow they tie that game and get a point.
Just so typical the way their year is gone. I mean, you just can never count them out. And again, they gave up the first goal again. Like, I heard that stat the other day. I don't know if you heard that. But their record, when they give up the first goal, they win
like over 500.
They win 51% of the time. By far the best in the league. It's like they're just relentless. It's just typical of what they've done all year.
So they're 2 points clear of Tampa with a game in hand. Tampa gets schwacked last night at home against Nashville. So you're 2 points clear with a game in hand. You got Tampa tomorrow night. Win that game. Maybe even if you get a point, you know, it looks like it's yours if you want that division. And it's New Jersey in the first round versus Toronto in the first round. I think that's good for them. So there you go. The thing continues with the Bruins, and even with Brandon Carlo being hurt. It's not a great piece of news, but let's face it, of all the guys to get hurt, a lot of people thought he might be on the ninth floor even if he's healthy. He was one of the guys that you thought might be a healthy scratch. I mean, to me, he was in my lineup, but he wasn't in everyone's. I mean, I don't know really what they're going to lose there. You're going to have Greslick Miller at one pair and Krug and McQuaid at the other.
If there was any... if you were to list the defensemen, 1 through 6, of guys you could lose, who would you put first?
Well, 6, 7, 8 is McQuaid, Holden, and Carlo. Like, those are two of those three guys were going to be out of the lineup. So, you lost one to injury.
I don't think it's a massive blow. I mean, you want the bodies, you want the depth, but it's not a massive blow.
Does anyone question the Nick Holden trade now, though? I mean, that looks better and better. That's the one thing I can, after this injury yesterday.
Absolutely. As long as he plays, you know, you give up a third round pick in Rob O'Gara. Which, for even if he's your sixth defenseman, fine. If he plays, if he's on the ninth floor, I don't love that trade. That's an overpayment. He's helped you. I mean, so I don't know. Maybe it's already been worth it. All I'm saying is, what frustrated me about that trade is that they made the trade, third round pick, and O'Gara, and they got him played for the first 5 games. It's like, well, what'd you had to give up that much for someone to sit up on the ninth floor? So if he plays, to me, the trade's worth it. If he doesn't, you know, maybe not. But the depth is coming in there. Okay, you know you're a Bruins honk when... dot, dot, dot.
Well, you know where I'm going with this. When you defend everything Brad Marchand does.
Oh, that's a good one. That's not where I was going, but go ahead. Marchand got hit again, folks. Popped again.
Suspended. Fined $5,000. The ninth time he's been suspended or fined now.
Ninth. Ninth. There's only three players in the NHL who've been fined or suspended more than four times. Rafi Torres and Zach Rinaldo are the others, and they have 5 and 7 respectively.
Yeah, they have 12 combined. Marchand has 9. He's
nine.
Closing in.
9.
Can I play this game? Ask
yes.
me again. How's it start?
You know you're a Bruins honk when...
You act like an oversensitive child when anyone criticizes Tuukka Rask.
That's another good one.
Not bad. Well, I like it.
Here's what I was going to say.
Oh, here we go.
You know you're a Bruins honk when... You care about the 7th player award. Which I do. Which I do. This is how you know I'm a Bruins honk, because I care about the 7th player award. This is... That's hardcore Bruins Hockey Krishna honkdom. It is. When you care about that Furkacka award... But I do. I remember from when we were kids and TV 38 and like all of it. Like, I care about the 7th player award. You freaking honk, Felger. And it's outrageous that you people don't get it. You don't get it. You don't get what happened. The new Bruins fan does not understand the spirit of the 7th player award. They gave it to Charlie McAvoy. Who's your number one defenseman? 2 at worst. Don't you get 7th player? There's 6 on the ice.
Someone who goes above and beyond expectations.
So it's someone from the middle to the bottom of the roster who overperformed, not someone at the top of the roster.
Of course, on this team, you could have picked about 5 guys, but keep going.
What in the name of Johnny Pearson? Like, we need a refresher course. We need to go back. The Bruins fans need to be re-educated on what the 7th player award is.
It's not a popularity contest.
It's also not for your best player. It's for the guy.
Right.
Know, the guy who was... Exceeded expectations by the greatest amount.
It's not for your first pairing defenseman. It's for your third pairing defenseman who overperforms.
Isn't there one clear answer here?
To me, there's 2 guys, and then everybody else is vying for third.
Okay, I want to see if you're 2 and the same as my 2. Go.
Riley Nash and Anton Hudobin.
Yeah, exactly my 2. Exactly my 2.
That's it. That's it.
Hudobin and Riley Nash.
Hudobin and Nash. And now I was just in the process of pulling up Nash's stats. You don't need it. He's like...
He's got like 16 goals.
He has exceeded his previous season highs by like 4 times. 4x. Something like this. They're just... He's gone way beyond his statistical norms. I don't know if you have them.
15 goals, 26 assists, 41 points in 76 games.
Previous high.
That I can get. Sorry. Okay. I just had the team stats up.
So... And he's been, when Bergeron got hurt, he filled in on that line. You barely missed a beat. Like that third line with Heinen and Backes was one of your best lines for much of the year. The guy, you know, there's a whole other story. It's that Riley Nash is a free agent. Do you reach into your pocket and pay him?
No. Mm-hmm. Career high, 25 points. This year, he's got 41. Career high in goals is 10. He's got 15.
Okay, so I said 4x. Again, another Felger exaggeration, but you get the point.
50%. Outdone both of those numbers by 50%.
And Anton Hudobin saved your season mid-November. Okay, so Hudobin and Nash, give it to either one of them. And if you want to go deeper, Greslick would deserve consideration as far as I'm concerned.
How about DeBrusk?
Kevin Miller deserves consideration as far as I'm concerned. Heinen deserves consideration as far as I'm concerned. I usually leave out the rookies because that's just like a rookie of the year. Like, that's another one. That's a different, like, no, the rookie is... I don't know. I want to consider that guy different. Like, I don't know. If you pull up the list...
How about Schaller?
Can you pull up the list of... Murray! Google this.
Oh, here we go. Here's something else for me to screw up. What would you like? Mike?
Murray, roll over and play dead.
7th player award winners for the Bruins in history. Like, did John Carter win the 7th player award one year? Like, these are the guys. Remember him?
Sure,
like,
of course.
These are the guys that should be winning the award.
Yeah, not Bork and Neal.
89-90.
I'm sorry?
John Carter won at 89-90.
Thank you, John Carter. John Carter. Perfect. You remember who that is? Like
left wing, Woburn.
I think he's from around here. Exactly. He scored a bunch of goals one year and you never heard from him again, but that's it. That's the 7th player. That's the 7th player. It's not your first pairing D. What's happened? Like, the Bruins fans, they don't get it anymore.
You want to know the last 3 years, not including McAvoy?
Go ahead.
Oof.
David Pastrnak?
Wrong.
Brad Marchand?
Wrong.
David Pastrnak?
Pastrnak won it twice?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Oh, you should never be allowed to win it twice. That's another thing.
Now, look at these names.
Stu or Murray, give me 1988 through 1995.
Okay, yeah, so 88. Randy Burridge.
Perfect.
Good one.
John Carter.
Perfect.
Ken Hodge.
Perfect.
Vladimir Rozyshko.
Right.
Rosie.
Yeah. Don Sweeney.
Right.
Cam Neely.
Wrong.
Mm. Blaine Locker in 94-95.
Yes! Good one. Steph, he sucked.
95-96. Kyle MacLaren.
Not quite in the spirit of it, but either way.
96-97, Ted Donato, but still.
Right, Ted Donato's the 7th player. Do you know that his son has already, in my mind, put up more notable plays than I saw his old man do in 12 years in the NHL?
Oh, no, I think he outscored him already.
How do you do this? Like, this is like, I wonder, like, what? I always wonder about genetics. Like, how come this, how does the son get taller than the father and the mother? I don't know how that works.
Jimmy.
And how does someone like Ted Donato?
Maybe he's actually Gretzky's kid.
Love you, mean it, Teddy. But good Lord, Teddy was this kind of player. His kid? That shot? His release?
Filthy.
So where does that come from? You can only work with what your genetics have given you.
Well, but it can come from a prior generation. It could have been like Donato's old man.
So Teddy's old man could play?
I mean, maybe his wife was good at it. I don't know.
Because it wasn't from him.
Maybe his wife shot a better puck than Ted.
I've seen Ted shoot the puck. That's not where his son got it from.
This kid's filthy.
But people really started to lose their way with this around 13 years ago. Because now, starting in 05-06, Tim Thomas, Milan Lucic, David Krejci, Tuukka Rask, Brad Marchand, Tyler Seguin, Dougie Hamilton,
right? You guys don't get it. You don't get it.
Riley Smith in 13-14. All right. But then Pasternak, Marchand, and Pasternak.
Wrong. Randy Burge, Joe Carter. That's the spirit of the rule. It's like we need a whole re-education thing.
John Carter.
What did I say?
Joe.
Okay. You knew who I meant.
Joe played for the Blue Jays.
Anyway, you know you're a Bruins honk.
Is that the year Joe Carter hit the walk-off home run?
You know you're a Bruins honk when you do 5 minutes on the 7th Player Award on the radio in Boston. That's when you know you're a Bruins honk. Guilty as charged. I got something else for you. An official Felger and Maz apology. We don't do this often either, but an official Felger and Maz apology is coming up next, Maz, and he doesn't even know what it is. I'll tell you what it is. Official apology coming up next.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and Maz.
You're listening to Felger and Maz.
Doesn't always have to be ha ha hee hee.
Oh, love it.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
So you want that fight with Deontay Wilder? We know that he's watching on our colleagues at Showtime tonight in the United States. So what would your message be to him?
Just like Dylan said, Wilder, let's go, baby!
We don't do this often, Maz. I don't like to do it.
Yeah, I don't either.
I don't like to apologize. But every now and then I feel that we have to.
I have a rule against it.
I don't. I'll do it if it's necessary. And I believe it's necessary. Here it is. If you watch that fight on Saturday night on the recommendation of Felger and Maz, because we've been talking up the heavyweights, we've been talking up the heavyweight division, we've been talking about Deontay Wilder and Anthony Joshua and how this division is back and how it's made boxing fun and we love it. And you should watch this and watch these fights because these guys go down, they throw haymakers, and it's not, just tap dancing around in the ring. These guys hit each other, they go down, they're knockouts. You got to watch this stuff. If you tuned in to Showtime early Saturday night to watch this heavyweight fight on our recommendation, I'm sorry. I apologize.
It was a stink bomb.
Holy moly, did this suck. It might have been the worst fight I've seen, and, all these fights that frustrate me. Mayweather Pacquiao, De La Hoya Mayweather, Triple G and Canelo Alvarez, all these fights that I made to watch that I hate that,
hugging and waiting.
This might have been the worst. This might have been the worst.
Oh, there was a lot of clinching in this thing. A lot of clinching, and most of it by Joshua.
There was no punches. No one threw any punches. Oh, the whole thing was frustrating. I hated the whole fight. It was awful. It was like they were taking care of each other. Weird. It was weird how they were like it was a double fix. Like they were both just trying to get through to the next fight or something. Oh, it was just awful. And the setup was so great. The setting was unbelievable. That stadium,
sure, awesome.
80,000 people. They're like singing songs like it's a soccer match. The lighting, the atmosphere was tremendous. The intros were great. Like, did you see the Joe Parker guy come in with the Kiwi tribal leaders or whatever that he came in there with?
How many anthems did he get?
And he gets like two or three anthems because it's New Zealand and this and that. And then Anthony Joshua just comes in on himself and he stands on the stage on the side for like a minute with the pyrotechnics. Like, this is awesome. And then they got in the ring and no one threw a punch. And the whole thing was annoying. The ref was annoying. Whenever they came together and it felt like there might be some action, the ref steps in. Anthony Joshua's stupid glove kept coming loose and like the tape. Like, what's this? The counter was off on the Showtime thing. They'd show 10 seconds left in the round and then would ring with like all these little things started to add up. And I got so aggravated by the end of this. I'm like, I told people to watch this. It was so awful. It made me hate Anthony Joshua. It made me hate Anthony Joshua, and then I had to listen to him after the fight. Talking all tough, though, this tough guy. Play Anthony Joshua 4 here, and this is again. So immediately, the Sky Network starts asking him about fighting Deontay Wilder, and he talks tough.
What would you have to do to beat him?
What would I have to do to beat Wilder? Get him in the ring, and I'm knocking Spark out.
Spark out. whatever the hell that means.
You think you meant spark up?
Spark out. Hey, a-hole, you just wasted an hour and a half of my time with... you didn't throw a freaking punch in this fight. I had to watch you for 12 rounds lumber around the ring and not throw a punch, and then you get into the postgame and talk about knocking him Spock out? Bah! Feh!
See, you know what? Before this fight, Murray, did you see this fight?
I did not, no.
Okay, so before this fight, I thought this guy will pick apart Wilder. Like, Wilder's raw. There was an emailer who said he stumbles around the ring like a newborn foal.
Yes, he does.
And I thought, what a great way to describe it. Because that's exactly what he is, right? He's gangly, he's awkward.
But he's entertaining, he throws punches.
But I thought, before this fight, I thought Joshua would kill Wilder. Now, I'm not so sure.
Now I wonder if Joshua's people have been protecting him. When I see that thing on Saturday night, I'm like, the big debate is who's been ducking who? I gotta believe that Wilder's been the one that wants it, and Joshua's been the one ducking him and being the one protected.
Joshua looked afraid to me in this fight.
He looked afraid.
He didn't want to get hit. He was and I don't know why, because the guy he fought was a little Kiwi runt, for crying out loud.
Compared to Joshua is
gigantic.
Oh my god! And then I got to listen to his punk manager, who's not a punk. Like, they're fine Englishmen, right? Like, they talk proper. They're all pretty. They're all well-dressed. I grew to hate these guys.
I know. I have a hard time taking them seriously.
By the end of the night, Anthony Joshua speaks perfectly. He doesn't talk like a trash-talking, punch-drunk, dumb boxer. He sounds like, you know,
like a poet.
Yeah, like he should be being served.
One of the Kingsmen.
He's having tea. And I'm like... Which would be fine if you hit somebody.
Henry James.
And then this dumb manager, give me Eddie Hearn, talking about like Wilder's been the one ducking him.
It's realistic from our side. He's had 21 fights. He's got 4 belts. Deontay Wilder was supposed to be here tonight, but he pulled out. Last fight, he boxed in front of about 6,000-7,000. Showed Deontay Wilder what 80,000 sounds like.
Oh, big. Let's just stop for a second. Like... Yeah, Deontay Wilder fights in New York City. With that thing on Saturday, it was in Wales?
Yes, Wales, yeah.
What else are they going to do? Well, no wonder. Of course he can draw 80,000. You put the thing in Nebraska, you're going to get more than... There's nothing else to do. So they have it in Wales and 80,000 people show up. And that's some great accomplishment? What else are they doing? They're running around in skirts. Like, it all would have been fine if his fighter threw a punch. His fighter didn't do jack in that fight. I'm just going to go ahead.
Can you sit down and do serious negotiations with him and his team?
Andy, they don't want it. They've never approached us. He's here. He fights all the champions. He wins all the belts. At 22 fights, he has a chance to be the undisputed heavyweight champion of the world. Don't forget how fast he's moving. Deontay Wilder's people don't contact us. They don't want to know. He talks the talk. He can't walk the walk.
Okay, so there you go. I mean, again, I had to listen to that guy after his fighter did exactly jack crap. For 12 rounds. I got so frustrated. I want Wilder to go over there so badly and beat the crap out of these Brits with their fine accents and their fine manners, and who bore me to tears when I tell people to watch a fight and they don't do a damn thing. Can we do this real quick? Here, let's do this. Quick 3-minute interview. Go ahead.
It's a 3-minute interview with Felder and Mash, where they talk to a random guest without the grab ass. Go!
Chris Mannix covers boxing for CBS Boston Sports. He joins us on the line. Chris, this is my question to you. Who's ducking who? Is Wilder ducking Joshua or the other way around?
At this point, Joshua is ducking Wilder. Look, Joshua made $18 million to fight this guy in his last fight. He could fight you or me out there and make $10 million plus. Wilder only made $2 million for his last fight, so there's a financial reason for Wilder to be this desperate to get Joshua in the ring. But unless something strange happens, like Joshua's going to be in the U.S. at the Barclays Center sometime this summer fighting a guy named Jarrell Miller and not Deontay Wilder.
Oh, you've got to be kidding me. So let's back up to the fight on Saturday quickly. What was Joshua's issue in this fight? Because he was passive.
Look, I think Joshua does not have a natural killer instinct. And I think he just didn't, you know, he knew he was up late in that fight and didn't go for it. Now, you can say, look, he won the fight, he collected a check, he got another belt. But when you're on that stage and you have that type of audience and you know that coming off Deontay Wilder's best win of his career, an emphatic knockout win that he had a couple of months ago, you have an opportunity to do the same thing against an elite opponent. You've got to go for it. Now, I don't think Joshua has been coddled, guys. I mean, he's fought top-tier opponents, whereas Wilder's 40-0. 38 of those opponents have been completely inconsequential on his resume. But right now, Joshua had an opportunity to make a statement. He just didn't do it.
Okay, so Hearn goes on about fighting with in front of 80,000 people here, and it really matters here. So now he's going to actually go to the Barclays Center, which he ripped, and fight some nobody? What's that about?
Well, he's trying to build Joshua up in the U.S. to a U.S. audience. So when he does fight Wilder, if it's on pay-per-view, the audience is at least familiar with him. But, I mean, two things. One, let's be clear. You know, fighting over in Cardiff, it's great, but they charge like $4 for a ticket.
Thank you.
It's not like you're making a lot of money. But at the same token, Mike, Deontay Wilder doesn't draw anywhere. He only did draw like 10,000 fans in Barclays. There's no home base for Deontay Wilder. He draws significantly, even Alabama, and make any type of money. So Anthony Joshua is by far the more lucrative draw.
10 seconds. Joshua Wilder, who would you have in that fight?
I would take Joshua still because I think he has a better chin and he could still land that big right hand that could put Wilder out.
Chris, thanks for taking the time. We appreciate it. Get us Wilder on the Air Force. Would you help us?
I'll help you out.
Thank you. Appreciate it. We tried to get Wilder today. We will endeavor to get Deontay Wilder on this program.
Well, you never know. Maybe he'll run a little late. We'll get him.
We're done. It's over. Leave. Goodbye. Stop talking. It's finished. No plugs. Hang up. Concluded. Terminated. Get out. We're through with you.
So that's the end of the three-minute interview.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.